Last time on Culture File, myself, Rachel Ni-Quinn and Owen Nolan were reviewing the year in culture, and we're about to discuss the possibility of grabbing hold of time itself when we ran out of that very stuff. Luckily, there's always part two where we discuss mortality from a 93-year-old's perspective, that box of eclairs that is Wes Anderson's film The Grand Budapest Hotel, and first off, episodic narrative addiction.
Appointment viewing is dead, right? So the notion of anybody racing home to catch Coronation Street at 7:30 is gone forever. And I don't think anybody's terribly sad about that. But there is a feeling of, you know, when you decide for yourself that you're going to watch the third episode of whatever it is, you're going to give in to your worst nature, and you're also going to find when you're in a relationship and you're watching that maybe your nature is worse than your partner's, you know, who says no, actually two of those is enough for me.
And it's the same old story.
Yeah, and then you fall out of sync, you know. Look, I'm going out on Friday, will you catch up on the things that you missed during the week? It often astounds me that even though I miss lots of things, that actually it wouldn't take much to catch up on everything.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's really strange that we're talking about this moment where everybody's kind of got this lack of focus and is zapping around on the internet, going from idea to idea. And yet we have this sustained focus when it comes to watching a program one after the other, after the other, after the other, and binge viewing. And it's this combination of attention spans that I find really interesting, and maybe the fact that we're not getting substantial content in our day-to-day interaction with the internet means that when we're on like an entertainment buzz, we're really enjoying that sustained focus. But it still, it feels different to reading a book.
But the model must work to some extent, because we've seen the appearance this year of something like Serial, where they've taken the accessory before the fact of a bunch of stuff you could consume and made it work for podcasts. Suddenly you've got 8 hours of listening. And that's something that seems to be an infection from Netflix and from the television. Mm. I suppose the question with Serial is it worth binging? Is it worth giving your life to?
I really like Serial, but I think there's a weird contingent that are very, very faddish about it in a way that I don't get. I enjoy it. I think it's intriguing. I don't think it's the best thing being made on the radio at the moment.
Owen, you offered to our celebration of 2014 one of the most profoundly depressing pieces of writing that I've come across, not only this year, but perhaps this decade, by Roger Angel in The New Yorker. This was an essay called This Old Man, which you feel is something you want to bring to the table of 2014.
Profoundly depressing. Wow, I couldn't see what would be depressing about that at all. Roger Angel, with two L's, is an editor of The New Yorker, and his mother was Catherine White, who was one of the founding editors with very quickly in after Harold Ross. His stepfather was E.B. White, who wrote Stuart Little and Charlotte's Web, but they were actually just things he did at the, you know, to make money in his twilight years, because he was a contributor to The New Yorker as well. Roger is best known as a baseball writer, and he's written the kind of definitive books on baseball, but he's written on lots of other topics. And he wrote this essay at 93, and he's dealing with the suicide of his 62-year-old daughter.
I thought it was beautifully well written, and I really liked the last sentiment, which was basically his wife, who had passed on before she had died. They'd had this conversation about her wanting him to go on and have another partner and share his life with someone else. But I found some of how he delivered the story of what had happened to him quite callous, even though I know it was a stylistic choice. He mentioned the death of his dog. As this is how he introduced talking about death, he talked about the death of his dog, and then very shortly afterwards, as a little side note, he then mentions that his daughter had committed suicide. And I know that that was done deliberately, but it still, to me, it didn't work for me. It just felt like he had taken the wrong tone. I think maybe I got distracted by just his very New York lifestyle, and okay, he'd had these difficult things to deal with in his life, but I was just struck by how fortunate he was. He talks about, you know, neighbours dropping over two roast chickens to him on the same afternoon. You know, just having that support network around you.
Although I didn't like the way they left them on his doorstep. Didn't sound safe.
They knew the dog was dead.
So that's Roger Angel's This Old Man, which is available free on the New Yorker site for everybody to go and be cheered or depressed mightily. So a little piece like a chocolate box that I would like to take out of 2014 and launch into the future was the latest film from Wes Anderson, The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I was hoping. In a way, I'd lived with a little part of it because Annie Atkins, the designer on it, is a good friend, so I went along with that kind of feeling of trepidation. I hope I'm going to like this as much as I want to, and I really enjoyed it. I really thought he was enjoying it, and I got that sense of his enjoyment from it.
It sort of proved that you could make a film that was entirely pastiche and that was entirely reverential, and it sort of is in love with the movies of the 30s and 40s to the extent of using their aspect ratio. He loves them that much. But that you could make a film that was so patently second degree parody and still be warm and full of heart and something new in itself. It had a kind of, it had a one face looking towards the future.
I don't think that it didn't have meaning. In fact, I think that it had a lot of meaning, but I think a lot of that meaning is caught up in a very consumerist ideal, which at the moment I'm having more problem with. You know, that I think just this year, watching things that have this, creating this real desire for expensive consumer goods. And, you know, I think Wes Anderson is probably pretty guilty of that.
There's something about the retroness of it that saves it from that. You know, these products are discontinued is definitely a message. So it definitely does deal with that kind of consumer lust, but it's sort of admitting the artifice and admitting that the product won't satisfy you. Yeah. And just being perfectly happy that it doesn't, and this is a vision of it, and you can't buy it.
Libby Gelman-Waxner, if you remember, used to write in Empire, and she said at one stage that, I mean, she's facetious, but that a good film will make you want to buy something. People going, oh, you know, that's a lovely lamp that they had. I love that bookshelf that they had in that thing. You know, the great thing about Grand Budapest Hotel being set in this unattainable fictionalized history is that you can't actually pine for anything in any way, but it maybe does start you looking for the classics that are around you, because you're looking at classics from another era thinking, oh yeah, that was lovely the way they did, you know, the embroidery on his hat with Lobby on it, on the Lobby Boy's hat, you know, and start looking for those things around you now. So maybe all of these things serve to make us enjoy our own surroundings more.
Rachel Nicquin and Owen Nolan there. And next time on Culture File, I'll be talking live to singer and musicologist Katrina O'Leary about her 2014 take on the Wexford Carols.